This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
An Albemarle County program that grants a reduced tax assessment to property owners who use their land for agricultural purposes will remain unchanged. At their meeting on July 9, 2008, the Board of Supervisors declined to make any changes to land use taxation. Staff had prepared a report that explored the effects on county revenue and staff time if land use taxation was only applied to property that qualified as open space under state law. Charlottesville Tomorrow's recording begins with Mark Graham, the county's director of community development.
I'm going to try to go through this fairly quickly. I think the staff report and the attachments were pretty thorough, but just try to go through and give some brief explanation on some things. The first thing is make sure everybody understands we are talking about option two only, and just for the people in the public here, in a nutshell, I've tried to simplify down what option two is, and really there's two parts to it. With the rural areas, it maintains land use taxation as open space with certain conditions, and I think those are important to note. Explained pretty carefully in Attachment A of the executive summary. But the three ways are, one, to enter into an agricultural forestal district, and I think that we'd see almost all property try to use that option if they weren't going to go ahead and go into a conservation easement for other reasons. The second is a recorded agreement with the county. And as noted in the staff report, that is a much more restrictive agreement than coming into the agricultural forestal district. And then the third option would be to a perpetual easement or conservation easement, as they're commonly known. Under this option, too, with open space, the property in the development areas that is currently in open space would not qualify. That is currently qualified for land use would not qualify under this option two. Just to give a little bit of perspective on what we're talking about, the properties in the red here are properties that are in land use right now. I've divided it out into two parts. One is those properties that are not currently in an agricultural forest district or in a conservation easement. And staff's estimated there's 4,398 parcels with 2,846 property owners there. These are the people who would really need to make one of those three choices in order to maintain their land use. The other are the people who are already, the properties that are already in the agricultural forestry district or conservation easement, 410 parcels or 266 property owners.
How are those designated on the map? Are they the two shades of red there?
That was something else. I would not use that to try to designate between which properties are in in a conservation easement or in an ag forestal district or not in it. Just consider that all the parcels shown there in red are the parcels that are currently have land use. The second thing wanted to show you, we talked about that the properties in the development areas would not be allowed to continue with land use, and wanted the properties in red reflect that. There's 73 properties shown with 47 property owners. I would note for you that this map is old, and this will reduce the number of properties and the acreage quite a bit. For example, down here on the south side, it's still showing Biscuit Run is in. That real estate is correct, is changed that for the as a result of the rezoning last year. Same's true out here with Live and Good next to Glenmore. As you noted from the executive summary, staff really focused on three additional questions to ask with option two. Number one was how effective will the program be in protecting rural areas from development? The second, how will the program affect property values and the county's tax revenues as a result of those property value changes? And third was how difficult do we believe it'd be to implement this program? With respect to the first question, the effectiveness of protecting the rural areas, the basic conclusion was that it can provide some constraint in the short term, but it's probably very marginally effective in the long term. And there are a number of reasons for that. Within the agricultural forestry districts, the properties that are in there under our current agreement, there is still a bit of an opportunity to develop that property or to add additional uses. You can create family divisions while you're still in an agricultural forestry district. You could create 21-acre lots. Then the other thing is, with both the restrictive commitments and the Ag Forestal District, to recognize that property could be cut out before the property was put into those districts or the commitment. And then similarly, once the property comes out of those, the district is up for renewal and people elect to come out, they can do a subdivision and then take the remainder of the property and put it back in. Or the same is true with those commitments. Finally, the other thing staff noted is recognize that this program is not permanent, and future boards can modify it. So if the idea is that it guarantees long-term preservation of the rural areas as you see it now, it should not be considered to do so. Property value.
Let me ask a question, Mark, going back to that. To what extent can the provisions that are currently permissive in agricultural forestal districts be allowed in the agreements not to develop? In other words, you've got this provision for family divisions in an agricultural forestal district. You've got a provision for 21-acre lots. Would that be permitted in the agreements?
No.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons why we believe that we'd see overwhelmingly the property elect to go to the Ag Forestal districts if this program was put in place. The second things we looked at was property values and county revenue, and we kind of divided this into the short term, the more immediate, and then the longer term. And as you probably noted from the staff report, the executive summary, there is some concern, especially in the development areas, these properties are forced out of land use, that some of the property owners may find it very difficult to be able to pay the property taxes at full assessed value. There would not be a rollback as a result of this, because of this change, so they don't have to worry about the five-year back taxes, but still the taxes moving forward could be pretty intimidating for some of these property owners. If a lot of that property is put out onto the market, especially at a time like now where the market is really struggling with the inventory that it has, we are concerned that it could adversely affect the assessed values, not just for that property, but overall, and may actually have result in a net loss as far as assessed value and tax revenue.
I understand that, but yeah, just a question here. Under our current plan, we could not alter the current plan to exclude property in the development areas. Is that correct?
That's correct, because the criteria is set by the state. If you have the four categories of use taxation as the county has adopted, if they meet those criteria, then they are entitled to land use taxation. And those properties that are in the growth area are properties that have been in continuous agricultural or forestry use since the program was established in the 70s.
But when rezoning happens on those properties, then they automatically will process out. I know it's not immediate, but it does happen over a couple of months.
If the property's in the growth area, if they're rezoned, yes, they come out of the land use program, and if they change the use, they come out of the land use program.
Right. Plus they're subject to the five-year rollback.
And then they would be subject to the rollback.
Similar thing for the rural areas. This one is one where we're really trying to read the tea leaves, and the speculation is about if the property owners are going to see that they need to go in an agricultural forestal district or one of these recorded agreements, and lock their property up for a 4 to 10 year period, how many property owners are going to be interested in creating a lot, two lots, or something like that to kind of have as an insurance policy? And that's kind of a question that we can't really answer. If there were a lot of them, and then as time goes on, they decide to sell, we could actually see somewhat of a similar thing as I talked with the development area, where there's more property being put out for sale on the market than there is demand to absorb that.
Right, let me ask you. Right now, we've got about something like 8,000 existing lots in the rural area, which most of which are not offered for sale. So it's not the creation of the lot that affects the market. It's when somebody decides to sell the lot, right?
That's true. That's exactly true. And that's where we're struggling to read the tea leaves. How many of these people who created these lots could afford to hold those lots and continue to pay the property taxes at assessed value on those lots? That's assuming that the lot they created was so small that it couldn't qualify as part of an ag forestal district or some other way. If it was a large enough lot, they could presumably subdivide the property and just keep it in the ag forestal district and sell it at any time.
Then, Dennis, this is an area, if a neighbor sold a lot, that's going to impact your property. Because property values around it will be impacted by the assessed value of it.
Well, I guess that's true today. I mean, when
if
two people divide their property and one person sells a lot and two or three lots are sold, that is a tendency to set the market for the assessments of lots in the area. And
doesn't impact those that are currently in land use next to it, though.
That's a good example about how much we don't know about the effect of the hardship of people. If they're in hardship to begin with to pay the taxes, then we throw them into a market where they can't sell anything. It's a great unknown that is very troubling.
Mr. Chairman, I thought we were just going to be listening to staff, but
sorry.
As soon as we start participating, if you don't mind, I have a short statement I should read. Which is that even though I've been advised that no disclosure is required under the Conflict of Interest Act, because this decision, whatever we decide about land use taxation, is going to affect the public generally, but I wish to disclose that my husband and I own less than 20 acres of property that is currently in the land use taxation program under the agriculture category of land use. The Option 2 proposal would affect whether our property would remain eligible for land use as well as the eligibility of a number of other people's properties. I want to state on the record this decision will affect my property interests. However, I've been advised that the Conflict of Interest Act does not restrict my participation in this decision because it is a matter affecting the public generally, and I've determined that I can participate in this decision fairly, objectively, and in the public interest. But I want to make this disclosure. Thank you.
If I may pile on there, because I was not properly prepared, as Sally was, our land has been in a conservation easement since 1998, and so I am also in that category of people who is affected in some ways by our decisions tonight.
I'm sorry that we interrupted you,
yeah,
Mark. Let's get back to it.
Quite all right. I think we've covered the short-term. Long-term, what staff believes is the volatility of the market and everything else aside, that from year to year, the fluctuations, that it can readily absorb the amount of developable land that we're talking about, and we should see some increase in the tax property values within the development area. Within the rural area, for the reasons we stated, that we don't think that it's going to significantly alter the amount of development that occurs in the rural area over the long term, we don't think it will affect the property values in the rural area over the long term. People will have the opportunity to take property out when they, over the long term, and subdivide it if that's what their interest is. The last issue for staff that wanted to bring up with you, and it's addressed in the staff attachment to the staff report as well, is the what it's going to take to implement this, and tried to be very careful and go through an analysis. Frankly, it was my analysis. I think, as you saw, I said when I got to the bottom of it, I think I was being overly conservative, and I cut my estimate in half as a result of that. But I do think this program will have a lot of short-term issues as we try to implement it. With that number of property owners, the 2,800 property owners, we're really thinking in terms of property owners rather than properties. That's going to require a lot of property owner education and assistance. It is somewhat complicated. We've noted that already with some of the questions we're getting from the public, so we think it's going to take a pretty significant effort on our part. We also have the actual applications that have to be processed. We anticipate it will be necessary to create some new AF districts as a result of this. And then for those people who do elect to go through the recorded agreements, there's going to have to be a process with those as well. Ongoing, the longer term, it's an ongoing program. It'll have to be maintained. And we do think that the district renewals, you just did three, they were pretty simple on your end, but on the staff end, it takes quite a bit more work. We do think those are going to get more complicated as time goes on because, as we said, this will be the one window of opportunity for property to develop. They'll take these periods of time to jump out, maybe not to put the property into conservation easement, as Wayne would say in these properties we're doing, but to develop the property and then take those remnants and try to get them back into conservation easements. Also, there's recognizing those property additions when they're trying to put those remnants back in. That's going to get kind of time-sensitive. What happens is the property has to be back and ready in land use with January 1st of that date. So whatever the addition to get back into the agricultural forestal district, they have to have had that approved by this board before that date in order to be able to qualify for the land use. If you haven't done it, if it happens in February, you pay taxes for that year. If it happens in December, you don't pay taxes for that year. So a couple of months one way or another could be very sensitive to a lot of property owners. So that's just something to get there.
Mark, excuse me, can I ask you a question? Just make sure I understand what you're saying. Are you suggesting that if we went ahead with option two, that the vast majority of rural area property owners not currently in ag forestry are likely to want to get into ag forestry so that they can continue to stay in land use tax?
Yes.
And that the impact on staff that you're referring to, one of them is that at the anniversary of those ag forestry districts, a large number of which would likely happen in a very short period of time, meaning that a significant number of properties would be put in all at once for probably a 10-year period, which means that 10 years from this year, a whole bunch of properties potentially might want to come out so that they could then develop their properties. And you're suggesting that when they come out and they're subject to being developed, that there's going to be a whole lot of new development site plans and all that good stuff going through staff, and that's what the staffing
We do think we'll see surges in workload that way, because you're absolutely right. When a district, the 10-year period for a district ends, that's their one opportunity to take, if they want to take their property and develop their property, that's the one opportunity to do so. So that's where we have to make the move.
Let me pursue that. So now I'm a property owner in the rural area. I'm in this ag forestry district to get cover from having to give up land use tax for obvious reasons. But at the 10th year, I decide I want to sell my property. So I come out of the ag forestry, and I'm now going to be subject to sort of the higher tax, the significantly higher tax rate that I'd have to pay without the land use tax. And so I'm going to not be able to afford to hold my land unless I sell it to a developer, because to hold it and pay that higher tax rate is going to be a huge tax burden. So theoretically, wouldn't the only people that would come out would be the people who actually could sell their land? And if we had a whole bunch of parcels coming out at the same time, they're not going to all be able to sell their land. Very few of them will, unless there's some huge abrupt change in the economic conditions that drive market demand for rural area real estate. And so I'm just trying to understand why you think that, in fact, most of those properties would come out, or a large number of those properties would come out at one time. You must believe that there's some market reason why all of those properties could be developed at the same time. Because if not, then people probably wouldn't take their land out because they wouldn't be able to sell it, and they certainly wouldn't want to have to pay the significantly higher holding costs of the land.
I think what Mark was talking about was the beginning of this.
Well, the beginning. He was really talking about, if
you had a lot of people wanting to get into ag forestal districts, the action to put them in the districts would have to take place before January 1st.
That was one of the bumps in staff time.
That, I think, was what he was talking. The ag forestal districts, the renewals of those districts would come up at different times during the year. They're not going to come up in different years. They don't come up all at once.
Well, but
and that happens today. I mean, we just renewed three today, for example, and some people withdrew property. Some property was added. Every time you renew an ag forestal district, I don't think we would discourage people from putting property in ag forestal districts.
Well, let me extend that.
Regardless of what we do with land use, and they automatically qualify, even if we don't have a land use program, anybody in an ag forestal district gets land use treatment.
If I'm currently, if the board does what it might do, and then suddenly I'm a property owner and I'm not in an ag forestry district, and I sure don't want to pay the bump in property taxes. I can't afford to. So I'm going to scramble to get in an ag forestry district. Either I'm contiguous to an existing one, or I'm going to find a bunch of neighbor landowners and form a new one. And probably more often, it's going to be people forming a new one, because even if they're contiguous to an existing one, if it doesn't roll over in the next 6 months, doesn't really help me anyway. So won't we actually have...
You can join an existing ag forestal district.
There's 24 existing ag forestal districts. And
if
you're within a mile of that core, you can elect to join into one of those ag forestal districts by making an application to join. And that would be processed. It's a process, as was described in the white paper, where it has to go to the Planning Commission, referred to a review committee, back to the Planning Commission for public hearing, the Board of Supervisors for public hearing and adoption of an amendment to the district. So it's a bit of a process, but
what we did today,
which you did today, a lot of these property owners, if they were forced to join AFDs, would join into these existing 24 AFDs. There probably would be some areas of the county where additional AFDs would have to be created. We don't know how many of those there would be. Those would all be processed basically at the same time frame probably and would repeat on the same cycle.
So, Larry,
the other 24 would be on their own cycle.
If I join, so I'm a property owner and I jump on board with a nearby ag forestry district immediately and it's got 4 years to run, not 10, I am obligated for 4 years and then I can either stay with it and roll over, or I'd better sell my land because otherwise I'm going to be paying a much higher tax rate.
That's correct. Well,
or you can take a piece out, which I think we saw a bit of today.
That was the hypothetical I was trying to explain.
I'd like to get back to that. Mark finished, but ask him clarifying questions if you want, but debating the pros and cons of the data.
I was trying to understand the program. Yeah. That's what was a clarifying question.
Yeah, just to clarify, maybe an example would help. Somebody has a 50-acre tract of property, and they their financial situation is such that they want to hold they continue to own the vast majority of the property, but they need cash. At the end of the period, they come out, they subdivide two or three lots off of that 50 acres, maybe 6 or 8 acres, something like that, and they immediately want to turn around and put that remnant, that 40 acres, back into an AF district, minimize the time exposure where they got the full assessed value. And what I was trying to say was where this timing can be sensitive is they have to go through this agricultural forestry process that Larry was talking about there after they go through the subdivision process. So you go through that subdivision process. If it gets up around September of the year and they are just starting that AF district process to add into it, they're probably not going to make it by the end of the year. They'll then have to have another full year of full taxes on that property before they can get back to land use. And that's the time sensitivity issue. As far as how many people will come out, that's a very, very interesting question to us because, once again, trying to read tea leaves here. You think about it in these land use districts, you're almost going to have these little sub-markets. And the property owners in that sub-market are going to be trying to look at their own financial situation. They're going to be looking at how many of the other properties in that district do they think are coming out, and how many lots are going to be dumped onto the market versus how much demand is there for those lots. It's a very interesting theoretical exercise if nothing else, but we're certainly not smart enough to try to outguess the market on those sort of things. So that's the long term. I think long term, it is probably going to require an additional FTE on our part as far as maintenance of the agricultural forest districts. And then just to kind of go through the staff summary, we don't think it's anticipated to significantly alter the rural area development rate. We've already gone through that. The program's anticipated to create some short-term fiscal impacts if implemented during poor market conditions. And that's what I talked about before as far as in a downturn if we're putting too much property out on the market at one time. We do think it will result in additional long-term property tax revenue from that undeveloped property in the development area that is currently receiving land use and cannot under this option two. We don't think in the long term we'll see much change in the assessed property values or tax revenues from the rural area properties. We think it will require a significant staff resources for the implementation phase of this option. And then we do think it will require probably an additional FTE for the long-term operation and maintenance of the program. And with that, I'd be glad to try to answer any questions you may have.
I had a question. It appears that the present ordinance produces 33% of our land in agriculture, right? 66% in forestry, 1% in open space. So that appears to be working well if we are in favor of creating agriculture and encouraging agriculture and encouraging forestry. 99% of the land and land use is in agriculture or forestry. 1% is in open space. Yet we want option two abolishes agriculture and forestry. Opens up 100% for open space. So it's going to drastically reduce the number of lots, the amount of land in land use. So isn't it going to be destructive to the land use idea?
Well, those properties that are in agricultural or forestry, qualified as agricultural or forestry, could still qualify as open space. That would be the only thing. It would not force them to change their use. But I think you are raising an excellent question by saying that open space is the only use as far as land use. Is it creating some sort of perception that it doesn't matter if you practice agriculture or forestry?
Well, in fact, you don't have to prove that you have the productive use of
That's
your land
correct.
If you're in open space.
That's correct.
Which is significant to me.
Mr.
Doyer, there would be. I mean, there's two parts to that. To the Mark's response, I mean, the property that remains in agricultural and forestal districts, those properties continue to qualify as agricultural and forestry land use.
You got to join those districts,
regardless of whether or not the county abolishes those categories generally. If you have an ag forestal district, that automatically allows property to qualify under the agricultural use or the forestry use, so those would not be affected. But those properties which enter into ag forestal districts would be treated the same way. So only the properties that are outside of ag forestal districts would be subject to the open space restriction if the board adopted option two. And those properties would then have to meet the open space criteria. Part of that open space criteria could be having the land in a forestry or agricultural use, because those types of uses can qualify as open space as well as other non-productive open space uses. So the option two, not diminishing the significance of the change, but it probably would not have a dramatic impact about how people use their property, except, as Mrs. Thomas points out, those people who elect to qualify under open space rather than under agriculture or forestry would no longer have to document that they have productive use of their property. It could simply be open space if they chose to qualify under the open space classification.
This encouraged farming and horticulture, which is really vineyards and the type of thing we want in Albemarle County. Apple crops, peaches, vineyards.
It would put an extra requirement on those types of properties to be in an ag forestal district if they couldn't otherwise qualify as open space.
Let me ask a dumb question. So
if I'm understanding you correctly, you're telling me that this option two, as a practical matter, is going to impose an administrative burden on citizens because they'll have to make some adjustments in their status. They'll have to get into an ag forestry district, or they'll have to go through this fairly restrictive contractual agreement with the county. There will be increased burden on staff to accomplish this. But everybody that's in land use tax today, except those that are in the growth area, could get into land use tax under the new program. They just would have to go through some administrative burdens to do it. We're not going to actually, if we were to do this option two, we wouldn't necessarily reduce the number of participants in land use tax at all.
But that assumes that what you're calling a sort of a bureaucratic system is one in which they don't care whether they have the ability to sell off any of their land during the period in which they're in an ag forestry district. So it's a guessing on their financial future sort of situation. It's not simply jumping through some more hoops.
Well, it's both jumping through hoops and incurring the risk that if they do need money and they can't liquidate their property holdings because they're in an ag forestry district, they're actually in a worse spot financially. But I guess what I'm getting at is if the logic behind trying to explore this option too was to see, I mean, there are a lot of folks in the growth area who've written to me and said, oh, this is, you know, a problem that we have all this money that we're not collecting because of the land use program. And what I'm trying to get at is it sounds like staff suggesting, and they're probably right, that if we adopted option two, we're probably not going to change our revenue picture from land use tax revenue very much. We won't have very many pieces of property that will drop out of land use tax, but we still might have an unintended consequence, as the staff report suggests, of driving down the value of rural property somewhat, which might have an aggregated effect of reducing revenues to the county even more. Am I reading you right?
Yeah, I don't think you can have it both ways, though. If people don't jump out, if everybody goes into land use, it won't have an impact at all.
Right.
If people jump out, some people would pay higher taxes because they jumped out, and it might, there might be a diminution in the value of some rural lots if you had a lot of lots come on the market at the same time. So I don't know. That's a very difficult computation to try to guess at. The summary of the staff report that Mark provided, which indicates that he doesn't predict that this will change the development patterns occurring in the rural area, is an important factor here, among other things.
So it isn't going to change the development patterns much. We don't predict that it will. It won't change it won't reduce the amount of lost tax revenue attributable to land use tax, perhaps at all or very much. It might have a small negative impact on rural property values, which in turn would reduce revenues to the county.
Right.
I guess the question is, why would we do this?
Yeah, there is a question. There's that question.
I'd like to bring up at this point. Well, we've all had the opportunity to review an extensive staff report. We've had one other work session on this. We've all, I think most of us, and certainly some of us, have had the opportunity to publicly state how we felt about this. Is there any need to go on any further? Do we have four votes that want to continue this discussion? Or can we drop this at this point and move on to revalidation, which is the real point I think that we should discuss?
Well, I had a question that I don't know where it fits in, and I think we've discussed this in previous years, which has to do simply with the SLEAC values that are applied to the land use. So it's not directly connected to our discussion, but it's indirectly, because if this discussion is driven by the people who think the $18.8 million gap is what's driving this discussion, then one way to talk about that gap is to say it's driven by the state's evaluation of agriculture and forestal land in Albemarle County. And in their opinion, forestry is going right along and increasing at 3% in value over last year, but agriculture is decreasing by 40 or 44% over last year, and likewise horticulture in the 30% decrease and open space in the 40% decrease. I know we've had this discussion in the past. I don't remember how it's come out, though. I know we've always decided to stick with the SLEAC values. Can we freeze those values? Can we stick with the 2007 SLEAC values instead of continuing this, what seems to be an outsider's view of what the agricultural value of land and crops, and as you probably know, they don't include cattle, and so it's simply the hay and corn crops.
Mr. Woodsell may be able to speak to it more than I can, but the my understanding is that you can either choose the SLEAC values, and you have to use the current SLEAC values.
You do have to use the current
SLEAC. Or you can do your own local study.
Yeah.
And if you can validate
We've
your own local...
We've always assumed that's not something we want to get into.
That's correct. So if you do your own local study and validate that study, then you can use local land use values. But Mr. Woodsell may be able to speak to the difficulties of accomplishing that.
No, I think I can picture those. But I and I know even the... Or I shouldn't say even, but I know the Farm Bureau a few years ago asked that question, could we freeze the SLEAC values? So the answer is that the state doesn't allow us to
that.
Either in or you're out.
That's such a common answer at this table. The state doesn't allow us to do it. Okay.
Well, I want to go back to my question then at the board here, because I really would like to. I mean, I've had overflow of information on this, and we could stay here for hours and discuss it, but I really would like to kind of get a straw poll of where everybody is to see if we can move on to the next item, which I think is one we do want to hammer out. So, here to comment. I'll tell you, I'm opposed to it. I've been opposed to making any changes to it all along. I think it's going to do more harm than good, and don't see a real need to do it.
I'm against.
I appreciate the support, but please let us discuss this so we can...
I'm against option two, and I think we need to leave land use the way it is.
As it's clear, I'm not an enthusiastic supporter of the option two approach. I think that there's another option that if the board had the interest in exploring it, I'm interested in exploring it, but I'm not sure that I entirely support it, and I'll tell you what it is and what my apprehension is. There is an option that we could consider, which would be to go to open space only, and the eligibility requirement would be the land being conservation easement. The advantage of that could be that it would reduce the number of... I'd like to be able to express my views.
Please, y'all have to keep this down so we can discuss this. Everybody's entitled to be heard here, okay? Please be courteous. Thank you.
The objective would be to try and reduce the available development opportunities in the rural area. The problem for me with that strategy, and I've in the past expressed the view that there may be an argument for having that be a condition of land use tax, because it is in fact a permanent commitment to not having the land developed. The problem with it is, to the extent that it would entail an extinguishment of the use of the land, having to put the land in conservation easement, there is the issue of, all right, well, what about the potential lost value to the property owner? And that's where I'm not sure at this point that I would support going forward with land use tax revised so that it had as the only eligibility open space with conservation easements, unless we had a TDR program so that those development rights that the property owners would have to give up to get into the program wouldn't be simply extinguished, would instead become a detached real estate asset that could be sold in an open market. In that case, I think there might be the potential for a fair solution to this issue, but short of that, I'm not sure that I'm comfortable just doing what I proposed before, which was that we take the only eligibility requirement and have it be open space conservation easement. So if other members of the board would be interested in staff coming back to us and looking at that alternative strategy to option two, which is open space only based on conservation easements, so long as there was a TDR program associated with it, I'd be interested in pursuing it, but that would be the only
answer.
Well,
that.
Could I say something about that? Because I did check this out a little bit, not with definitive legal advice, but the way that many people are enticed, encouraged into getting conservation easements is because of the way the IRS and the state tax provisions allow this as a gift, and there is significant financial incentives to do so, and that if we were to force people into conservation easements, then the charitable intent would be brought into question, and I think that that's something we don't want to get into, so I would not be in favor of that at all.
Please. I appreciate that this is a very emotional issue, but so that we can work through this, I would ask you to hold your applause. Thank you. So was that a yes or no answer to my question about option two?
I can't see supporting option two at all. The question is, does the board have any interest in looking at a combination of the other suggestion with TDRs or no? And if the answer is not with TDRs, then I wouldn't be interested in just the conservation easement as a requirement either.
I would agree with what Sally said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't support option two. I think it was good that we had staff come back with information on it. We've had a lot of interest by people in the community and in the board looking at land use and looking at whether or not we are getting, the county is getting a good bargain for the cost of land use. But option at the end of the day, option two, according to staff, would not reduce the development occurring in the rural area. It would not increase county revenues. And would impose a significant administrative factor that's not there today and in fact probably cost somewhere around $150,000, $200,000 of staff time next year, which will be not a good revenue year based on the things we're seeing now, and substantially reduced increased administrative expense thereafter. But the only thing that's before us tonight is option two, and based on the information we've gotten, I don't support that.
Yeah.
And as far as what David suggested, if we get around to looking at a TDR plan at some point in the future, we could certainly look at various permutations of how that might work, and which might include easements, land use, etc. I've had a whole lot of people that are my constituents concerned about the expenditure. The way they view it, the expenditure on land use, which is next year, is about $19 million. I think that's about 14% of all equal to about 14% of all the real estate revenues in the county. So there is a significant component of the population that feels that they are paying 14% higher taxes to support other property owners. That is their view, and I think that's the perception, and like it or not, there are a lot of, I know that most people here have land use, so certainly nobody wants to see their taxes increase. The people that are not in land use, a lot of them say, well, you could eliminate land use and my taxes would go down 14%. I think that there is a perception issue that needs to be dealt with. And I think that it would be helpful to, as a part of this, look at, in the farm, I'm speaking to the Farm Bureau and others who are interested in maintaining this program, to educate the public about the value of the program, because there is a perception that it's a costly program that's not achieving a purpose.
Dennis, I was going to suggest that, unlike many counties, because I went on the Internet and I've pulled up what a lot of different counties do in terms of their taxation, their land use taxation, and the information they put out to the public. And many other counties say what the purpose of land use taxation program is. We don't actually say that on our webpage. I'm not sure that we've ever expressed it. There is a state purpose that is expressed by state law, and all we'd really have to do is pick up that. But other counties have added to that as they view what they view as the purposes, because I think we do have to defend it as having a public purpose. It can't be for the private benefit of private landowners. It has to serve a public purpose, and I think that's kind of what you're getting at. So maybe when this is all over, we could talk somewhat about a simple statement of what we regard as the purpose of land use taxation. I think that would help both those who think that they're spending some of their money for this program and what is it doing, and it's not too hard. It only takes a couple of sentences, but I think that might be helpful in delineating what its purpose is, and also would help us with things like the revalidation form and how we're going to work on that next.
And do you have a comment you want to make?
Well, I do, because I
I think a month ago I was the one that threw us into this morass of discussion because of wanting to pursue the discussion. And I'm very glad, even though it's been painful for some folks, and anxious-making, I'm glad that we have had this time to really dig into this and to get a lot more information out. And I do agree that we need much more clarity of information. We need more information from our assessing department about how the current program is functioning, how people who don't qualify are actually being taken out. And I learned some about that just yesterday. So there's a lot that we don't know, and I think getting that information out will help the people who are not in the program to feel that they are getting more value for it. And I would propose for people to think about, before we get together again, what I was going to open with was what is the goal of the program. And to me, in my mind, the goal of the program is to support the county value which makes us so different from Fairfax, and that is our agricultural community. And 50 years ago, Fairfax was just as rural as we are, and we will be like them if we're not very careful. And so if people understand that the reason they came here was because of our agriculture and our scenery, they're willing to support that. And the growth area residents that have spoken to me are very happy that they can look out of their nice neighborhood and see open space and see a farm across the street or a couple of hills away and not look out of their neighborhood and see neighborhoods all the way to the horizon. That's a very different feeling for them in Crozet. I know that there are people who are very concerned about the money, but we do also need to remember that the farmers, the people in land use, are paying 100% on their house, their cars, their tractors, their all the improvements on the property. So if you compare those properties to others who do not qualify, we are all following the same rules. And that is something that I don't think is emphasized enough. It's the dirt that is based by the Sliac people on its production value. It's not as accurate as it should be, and certainly we should get more credit for our vineyards and our cattle that we're raising, which are huge amounts of money right now, instead of just corn and other things where we don't have the soil to grow those commodities. So I do hope that at some point we'll get better values to use. And as there have been lots of changes in the last couple of years, increase in production and increases in agricultural value that aren't even in the census yet. So these will start to balance out. But I think that this, in some ways, it's been a bit of a political football, and the land use program has been sucked into a debate about development. And so I would like to see us stop trying to use the land use program as a growth management tool and use it strictly something that we can defend to preserve the agricultural quality of life in our community and all the economic benefits that it brings us and the employment benefits that it brings us and the reduced expenses that it provides. So that's more speech than you wanted, but I did feel like I needed to share some things because of pushing us down this hill to begin with.
So I'm to assume from what I've just heard is that we are going to drop option two as a discussion point as of tonight. And that we're going to leave land use intact, except for we will still want to discuss revalidation, which is the next item.
And 3 years ago, when I was waving the flag of having a form to fill out, lots of people resented the idea and didn't want to participate, even though it works in lots of other places. But I think there's been a sea change in the last several years, and people have realized that a simple form that is not burdensome, they're not going to have to hire somebody to fill it out for them, that is a way that we can also get better statistics and better understanding of how the program is functioning, and that will help to educate the rest of our citizens who aren't in the program.
So I'm glad we didn't put this to a committee, which might spend a year and a half to come back to get to this point that we are tonight.
For the public, I want you to understand that what the board has decided is that we're not going to institute any changes in land use taxation as such, but we are going to take up the revalidation process, so that's going to be the next item, which we're going to move to now. Okay. And Mark, are you going to?
That's what Bruce is going to.
Oh, Bruce. Okay, Bruce, are you going to talk about that?
You know, some of us came really loaded for bear. You've sort of cut us short here.
I'm sorry.
Nothing like finding that they don't have any opposition.
Well, we gave it a good look, which was appropriate to do healthy to do.
No, I'm very glad we did.
And once you
it's
find
just
out that
I did a lot of work
to make
you
anywhere. That's important.
It was a bad
decision.
Idea.
And it'll just take you right
there. I'll talk at once. I'm sure we're confusing the public here.
Ready now, Mr. Chair.
All right, Mr. Woodzell.
Good evening.
You're relieved.
We're going to show you a PowerPoint program, and then what I would like to do from that point is just field questions from the board. So, Richard, if you would please. Revalidation would mean that the office would begin to take a new step in how we treat land use. We've decided that we think revalidation is an important tool to use in evaluating land use. And this comes about somewhat, in my opinion, from the fact that we were biennial assessment up until 2007. We finished our last biennial assessment in 2007. So we went annually in 2007 for the assessment effective for 2008. With that requirement, my assessment staff is no longer going to be able to get around to each and every property over a biennial period. In fact, each property may now be visited over a 3, 4, 5 year period by IAAO standards, and that's the association that we use to determine assessment qualifications and standards. You should be on a property at least every 6 years. Our goal is not to do it to that standard. We want to do it more often. That being said, again, the point being, if we're not on the property but every 3 to 4 years, we're not able to visually check to see if these properties continue in the capacity that they originally enrolled. So revalidation would be a form that we would mail to all property owners that are under land use, and we would ask the property owners to fill out that form and verify back to the office exactly what this property is being used for crop-wise or forestry-wise or horticulture-wise, open space-wise. And we would take those forms and then verify, do they seem to meet state qualifications for land use assessment? And it would allow us to work with property owners if there was some confusion, if we feel like they need to further explain what they're doing, then that would give us an opportunity to have a relationship in that point, too. So, some of the advantages, we feel like the public would be better served if they had a little stronger confidence that the folks that or property owners that are in land use assessment are actually using these parcels in a qualifying use. If I hear much about land use, the one thing I do hear most often about land use is, are you sure that everybody is in the program is maintaining the qualifying use that they originally stated that they were doing? So this would be one advantage by asking the property owner, please submit a form and verify back to us. And that form I'll discuss in a little bit, but verify back to us in certain methods how you're actually using the property. It also, again, would be a tool for us to have a regular communication avenue with the taxpayer. Dear taxpayer, you're under land use. We wanted to remind you of that, especially if someone was new. They may not even be familiar with land use. And it would also, there again, with that avenue, we understand what they're doing. They're understanding what we're looking for. A disadvantage would be there is going to be some slight additional cost to the program, and that would be in the cost of forms and postage and envelopes and et cetera, staff time. The main, I think, disadvantage to this program to the taxpayers is that it's a timely form that must be filled out and submitted on a given date. Failure to submit this form would be exactly like failure to reapply in a regular fashion, which would mean the property would be disqualified from the program for the following tax year and would not be eligible until all proper forms were filled out. Now, there would not be an assignment of a rollback. It just means for that period of time that they were not actually in the program, they would be subject to fair market tax. So, again, it would take timely application of this form. It's just as important if you go to revalidation as filing a regular application on time.
Can you pay a penalty if you're late?
Yes, sir. We have some target dates in the packet that you received, and we have submitted to the board a regular date and then an extension of a date. There's no filing fee. We've requested no filing fee with the initial app. If it is late, we'll accept it with a $125 late filing fee. And that's the same as the land use application. Just in front of you now are some other counties that are currently administering a revalidation program. If you'll notice, Augusta, Fluvanna, Green, Louisa, Orange, they actually, and Nelson, they actually touch us. So, you know, even the surrounding counties that, that have land use are using reval. Most of them used it from the initial period. I think we didn't. My historical guess would be because we were biennial. We were on the properties all the time, and that relationship was, nice for us, nice for the taxpayer. Some of these other counties, the assessment period was much longer.
Yeah, 6 years.
Yes, sir. So what we'd recommend if the board decides to initiate the revalidation is that we do some extensive education with the public, and that would be that we would do flyers in the October 2008 tax bills, again with the January 2009 reassessment notices, that we would begin to tell the public that the board has adopted this, be on the lookout for it, here's what it's going to mean, here's what you'll be required to do. And we will do our best to make sure the public is well aware of their obligation, well in advance of the first timely application. Maybe diddly was the right word. Sorry.
Bruce, can I ask you a question about that?
Yes, sir.
So if I'm a property owner and I have a mortgage on my house, for example, and so my tax bill goes to the mortgage company and it doesn't go to me, I could slip through the cracks. Is there a way that we can ensure that every property owner will get the notice whether they're the primary recipient of the tax bill or not?
Actually, as a property owner, you're going to get the original tax bill. The mortgage company is only going to get an electronic printout of what you owe. You'll actually get your original tax bill.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
That's the case right now.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
But there's a note on it saying the mortgagee will pay this bill.
Sure.
And you'll prominently say, new program, read this if you're in land use, so that
sure.
Everybody actually will catch up.
Actually, I realize it's extra expense, but since we're talking about that, I really would be opposed that first year of including it with the tax bill, because we get stuff in our tax bill all the time, and I bet a lot of people are like me, they just throw it away and don't look at it. So I think it should be a separate mailing the first year.
Or maybe
year.
Both. I don't throw mine
I'd
away.
I don't throw
away
my tax bill.
If it's from the IRS, do you throw that away? Well, we'd also, I would want to use the I'd want to use the county internet site as well to make sure that, you know, we have some publicity out on the county website, radio, TV, however we can get the story out to the folk. But, again, I'll leave it to the board. If they deem it best, not the first tax bill, we could work with that.
Well, maybe I was misquoting, because if it's going to be printed on the actual bill, people don't throw away the bill, but they
nope.
do throw away those inserts that are in there.
That late fee a little stiff.
That's the exact same fee, Lindsay, as we charge now for the land use application. And again, there is no fee for the initial application.
For revalidation.
There is a fee right now for the initial land use application.
But once you're in it, if you're going through revalidation, you're not going to pay any extra fee.
No
unless
fee.
You mess up and don't
correct.
Make the deadline.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And as I recall, we're not allowed to have a fee for revalidation.
We were allowed to charge a fee every sixth year.
Every sixth year.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, right. Yeah. But not every year.
And no more than the initial original application fee.
Right.
So we felt like
one of the things that we got showed some other county doing seeming to have a revalidation fee every year, but that's
contrary.
In the chart in here, it seemed like they were having revalidation every year, and yes, it was a $10 fee. And so that was not clear, certainly, from the
unless they have some special legislation or charter that provides something other than the state law that would seem to be out of alignment.
Go ahead, Fish. Yes, sir. The revalidation application forms in what we anticipate mailing in the April 2009 tax bill envelope. Again, if the board deems that they would prefer to have that as an individual envelope, we can do that. And if that route is taken, then that would be only to the folks that are in land use, naturally. Application initially is due back September 1st, 2009, no fee. Application accepted through December 5th, $125 late fee. We've decided that we feel like revalidation on a two-year cycle, since that the original avenue of relationship was, again, biennial with the taxpayer, that two-year revalidation should keep us somewhat in a way to make sure that the folks are doing what they say they're doing, and we're pretty comfortable that's the truth.
So they would report each of 2 years on one form?
Yes,
and that would allow for a drought and not so much production one year and catching up the next year's cutting or something like that.
Well, we can design the form, and in fact, if the board approves this tonight, we will come back with the form that we're recommending, for approval. So the form can contain any and all information that we've seen to feel like is most important for us to verify the results.
Bruce, let me ask you a question. As Lindsay pointed out earlier, 99% of the folks in land use are in because they're agricultural or forestry use. Am I correct that on the form, all the applicant has to do is affirm that, yep, I'm one of those two? They don't have really to do anything beyond just say, yes, I am, or do they have to demonstrate in some way that they are?
No, we're going to recommend to the board, and the form itself will have one of the avenues to affirm use would be a farm schedule, like an IRS return. One method of confirming would be receipts and, you know, checks, whatever a landowner would furnish to me as proof. If you're in forestry, we're going to ask you for a forestry management plan or a commitment form that I have in my office. So, no, we're going to actually ask for specific...
Well, but we'll discuss that further,
sure,
won't we?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, then I just wanted to clarify on that. So when I was in the rural area and I was in land use, you know, Albert Morris cut my hay, and that was the deal. That's how I was eligible for land use. I didn't have any paperwork. That was just how it was done. Are you saying that now folks will actually have to have some kind of a documentation that
yes,
confirms the fact that, yes, he cuts my hay and it's an even trade?
Yes. We're going to also recommend a lease form as well.
Or are we going to propose model forms for people to use to make it as easy on them as possible?
Yes.
So they don't have to go and hire a lawyer to reinvent the wheel?
Yes, sir.
So that,
yes, sir.
They'll get from our website all they need to do to be able to be compliant and then make the appropriate documentary support of their...
We're actually mail the forms to them and tell them what we think they need to furnish to the office for proof, and then allow them to send it back. Once we get it back, if there seems to be a need to recontact the landowner, We will do that on our office staff to take that initiative.
Sam, well, I'm really impressed that these different forms, some of them look like their main intent is to discourage the applicant, and others look like their main intent is just to make sure that there's agricultural activity going on. And there, boy, is there a difference among the different counties. And I think that we have said consistently that we want our rural area to be used for agriculture, for forestry, and for protection of natural resources. We haven't said that we want to make it complex, difficult for people to be farmers. And so I'm just speaking for myself, but I'm going to look at that form with an eye to how easy it is and how it encourages those uses as opposed to the opposite.
So, I would agree with that.
Yeah. Clear, specific questions. Number of acres, number of cattle, number of hay bales.
And I think that Chesterfield, just as an example, that's in here. I think that was pretty straightforward. I don't think that was burdensome as far as what's going on the property.
I actually prefer Spotsylvania County,
okay.
So if you want to look at that one.
Okay.
You know, what might be a good idea is before you bring something back for recommendation, to talk to some of the stakeholders about this. I mean, certainly
yes,
you could go to the Farm Bureau and get their feedback.
Absolutely.
On the form.
Our consensus signal to staff, though, should be we want this to be as user-friendly and as non-burdensome as possible to the farmer in
yes,
the forest.
Right.
Well, we do want to, in fact, validate that the activity is taking place on the property that is supposed to be taking place in order to qualify.
I went ahead and had some conversation with the Department of Forestry, and there's some of their staff people here who would be interested and willing to discuss that with us if we want to get into that tonight. I didn't promise them we'd be getting into it, but they certainly have put a good deal of thought into what they think would be a valid way of verifying forestry, which of course is about 60, I think Lindsay said this, but it's 67% of the people who are in land use actually are in that because they have forests. And I think the validation should be quite different because I think a forest has its value, and I think the Department of Forestry is recognizing this in more recent years in terms of clearing the air, the water, holding the soil in place. You don't have to be doing forestry the same way you have to be doing farming. Your forest is of value for all those environmental ways, whatever you're doing. So
But I think what we're...
Anyway, if we want to have some Forestry Department advice, they're sitting there and willing to talk to us about it.
What I was saying as far as when... I think what we're trying to do tonight is move forward with the concept, because this would have to come back for a public hearing and all of that. But I think what you're also hearing from everybody here is that we certainly would want you to gather some input from, again, the stakeholders. And the Forestry Department would definitely be someone that we...
I also had a suggestion that if... I wasn't sure how the discussion about option two was going to come out tonight when I was thinking through this, but if we want to have an application that says right up front, is your land in a conservation easement? If so, your qualification is confirmed, skip to the bottom and sign your name, sort of thing. Now, to make it evident that if you want an easy process, you put your land in a conservation easement. Second question, if you've got your land in Ag Forestry District, your land use is confirmed, you know, skip to the bottom, sign your name. I'm obviously not doing this the way an attorney would be writing this.
The one issue that would present, though, is that even land that's in an Ag Forestry District or in a conservation easement still has to meet the requirements for the classification in order to qualify for land use. So a piece of property could be in an Ag Forestry District, and if it's not being farmed or it's not in forestry, it would not qualify for land use. And the same thing for a land in a conservation easement. If it didn't otherwise meet the requirements for a classification at the time that it was put into a conservation easement, for example, if it was 4 acres of property that was put into a conservation easement, it wouldn't qualify for land use taxation, even though it's in a conservation easement. So,
and the CLAC values are going to be different depending upon the uses, right? I mean,
the value would be different depending on how it qualified, and if it didn't qualify at all, it would have to be assessed as at full fair market value minus the value of the easement. So it's not going to be as easy as you might at first sense.
My good ideas run afoul of the state.
Spirit of your suggestion.
But, yeah, if there's any way to carry out that spirit in the sense of using the revalidation form as a way of encouraging conservation easements, it would fit our board's strategic goal of encouraging conservation easements without doing the requirement that was talked about in option two.
I'd like to make one comment about the Chesterfield form. If we're gathering general input for you to use in the future, all persons having an interest in the property must sign is a disaster, because there are people scattered all over the country who are not going to be signing the check to pay the taxes. And I really hope you can find a way to have a sort of general partner farmer, whoever it is who is the main local person who pays the bill, be able to fill out this form, the one who knows, not Cousin Millie in Arkansas, who really has no idea about the hay or anything else. And that is going to be a real problem if we make it difficult for people to fill this out.
And I understand that. I'd have to defer to legal counsel. I know if it's the initial land use form, it absolutely says all owners must sign. And I'm sure that's where this verbiage has come from.
Okay.
Now, I'm not sure, again, because I'm learning about reval as we go too.
Right.
But if Larry wants to speak to that, I'm not quite positive. If we are revaling, do all owners have to sign? Apparently Chesterfield may feel that's the case.
Yeah. But, I mean, the orange and all the other simple ones, just say signature of landowner, affidavit or whatever.
I have to have all the answers tonight, Larry. You can defer.
These are just the problems you can solve, that's all.
My presumption would be, without having researched that specific issue, is that if you don't have to require revalidation at all, that you could have a lesser standard for revalidation than you would for the initial application. But Bruce is correct. The initial application does require property owner signatures. I doubt that a revalidation form may have that requirement.
If it's not required, it's the sense of this board, obviously, that we'd prefer to make it the least owners we can. Are you done? I had a question. I didn't want to interrupt. If I'm in forestry for my use, in order to be eligible, do I have to have a forestry plan I'm not in an ag forestry district?
That's one of the state standards.
So some significant number of our land use property owners who today are in forestry use because they've represented it as such, but they may not realize that they actually have this obligation, might have something of a sizable burden to go and implement a forestry plan to become eligible. So is there a way that we can maybe provide some kind of
detailed web information and other supplemental information, the mailings that maybe just go out to people who are in land use for forestry reasons, to make it as easy as possible for them to know how to go through those steps, short of having to spend, you know, lots of money paying somebody to create a forestry plan. If there's,
I mean, it's not a complicated thing to have a forestry plan.
Well, if it's a good one, it is.
Well, I guess I don't know if we're going to get into the mode of judging whether or not they're good or not in order to allow people to have land use, but I think that the forestry department has specific directions about establishing a plan for your forestry plan for your property that are not really complicated.
I think those are things
we can be flushed
out.
The forestry department people could certainly answer that. That's not what not the impression I'm left with.
Well, I'm frankly very happy that is a state requirement. I think that's a huge step forward to get best management practices put into effect more often.
We have a form in our office now. It's called a landowner commitment form that was prepared by the Department of Forestry, and we are using that form for any and all new applicants. Some of the original initial landowners have had property in land use in 73. We've probably got, you know, plans from way back then. It's to anybody's benefit, and I'm sure a lot of folks out here have a plan. Whether they've submitted to me or not may be a question. But certainly to know what you have and to be able to maximize the use out of that is only to the benefit of the landowner. It does help, of course, us to make a decision, but it is a good tool to have a forest management plan. You can do that through a landscape architect, a Department of Forestry, or, again, we have a commitment form.
It might be helpful in the staff report that would come back to us, assuming we're going to go forward with a public hearing on revalidation, that part of that package of information that will come to us and therefore be available to the public actually describes what constitutes a minimally acceptable forestry management plan and how one might go about obtaining a plan so that they can then implement it, so that everybody, when we have this discussion on voting day, is fully aware of what we're actually imposing when we go through revalidation. I'm sympathetic to the purpose of the revalidation because I do want to have, you know, proper forestry management.
But I think when land use was first adopted by the state, the forestry department and many other people assumed that the use of a forest was to create lumber. And that if you didn't have a forest management plan that said in a certain number of years you were planning to harvest a certain amount, that your forest wasn't legitimately a forest. I think even the forestry department has changed its views of what is of value in a stand of trees. And it's not always its potential lumber as much as the other effects that it has. Something like 85% of the nitrogen that would otherwise end up in the Chesapeake Bay gets absorbed by the forest or something. I'm probably not totally accurate there, but there's something like that that the forests are doing when they're just sitting there. So I really do encourage you to work with the forestry department on that part of the questionnaire.
I would think that once a forestry plan has been submitted, that the reapplication would not have to require that another one be submitted every 2 years. The application could probably simply say, are you still following the forestry plan that you submitted in a previous year? So I think that the forestry part, the revalidation of the forestry part, once you get people in the program with a valid plan, should be fairly simple.
And Farm Service Agency would do this with the farm plans that the agriculture folks have. It's not something you do over and over again. It's something you refer to and make changes to when you need to. But the government offices are able to help with all that.
Can you explain what you meant by a commitment form?
It's a form that's got various information on it, and we had talked about possibly submitting it to the board in the packet, but maybe I haven't seen the board packet. Maybe it was not prepared and submitted. But it's a form that actually goes through an interview with the landowner and asks them, tell me about your property. It's forest. Tell me how you're using it. Best management practices. Mm-hmm. It was, again, designed by the Department of Forestry, so it's dedicated to tell us exactly what's going on with your property.
Is that in lieu of a plan? Was that in lieu of a plan?
Yes,
sir. If a person signed
the
commitment form and filled that out, they would not have to go out and they would not have to put together a forest management plan.
Yes, sir. Right. At the time that really was, when we really started using that, it was because in my discussion with the Department of Forestry, they have a very limited staff as well, And we have, again, 66% of the acreage in forestry, so they can't physically go out and do all of these overnight. This was done in lieu of having that professional plan until folks could request that plan. So it's maybe not the best substitute for a plan, but it's at least information submitted to the office.
Is there anything else that you had in your report, in your slides?
Here's some documentation, like a farm number, evidence of participating in a federal farm program. Again, copies of federal tax returns related to how the farm's being used. Certification of forestry intent. Again, this was just to show you possible documentation that we would request of the landowners to say, document how the property's being used.
Well, one of my comments on this sounds self-serving since we have a small number of acres, but I'm very interested in the Eat Local movement that's taking place in the agricultural community. And lots of people at the city market have 4.5 acres or something they can't even get in the program. But I'm very interested that it's going to be the small holdings that may produce the strawberries or the what used to be called truck farms, the more intensive agricultural use. So I want to make sure that whatever forms we have are not assuming large acreage and large farm operations, because some of our, I think the value in agriculture in the coming decade is going to be in pretty small holdings.
Larry, is there any circumstance under which a 4.5 acre parcel can be given a land use rate that's lower?
The only situation where that could occur is if the property was subdivided prior to July 1st, 1983, and there's an adjacent property under the same ownership, then that parcel could be aggregated with an adjacent parcel and still qualify for the minimum requirements, but that would be the only circumstance.
Would the boundaries have to be redrawn?
If it satisfied the use requirements.
If it satisfied the use
requirements. Yeah, I wasn't actually arguing for that. It was kind of an example of how it doesn't take a lot of acreage to produce a lot of products.
So the next steps?
Next steps would be board approval, the revalidation implementation process. If the board does that tonight, then we would come back at a date that the board would... or we would recommend to the board for a public hearing for adoption of the ordinance and the form.
Yeah, work session as I envisioned it at that time, and then we set the hearing.
One more work session, then.
I think so. I think it would be good for you all to have a chance to see the form, kind of the straw man form, and then you tweak it as you see fit before we put something out for public hearing.
Lots of time for public input beforehand?
Yes.
On the web and sent to different organizations.
And before we brought something back, Sally, for work session, we'd want to have the stakeholders' input in that as well.
Yeah.
So do you need a motion? Any action by us tonight?
Do you need a motion?
Yeah, that would be helpful just so that we know that that's everyone's ready to move forward, at least
I'll
with the revalidation process.
Thank you. I would like to move that we go forward with the development of a revalidation program.
Second.
Mr. Boyd?
Yes.
Mr. Doyer?
Yes.
Ms. Malik?
Yes.
Mr. Rooker?
Yes.
Mr. Slesky?
Yes.
Ms. Thomas?
Yes.
We didn't just vote to go forward with revalidation. No. We voted to go forward to have a public hearing and before that a work session to see whether or not we're going to actually do a revalidation program.
Well, I thought we voted to go forward with revalidation, but subject to a work session and public hearing as to what the form is going to take.
The clarity of the form, the content of the form.
We did not approve a revalidation program tonight. What we approved was moving forward with a public hearing.
Yeah. You can't do that until you have a public hearing.
Right.
Yeah. It's the process, right.